1, 2, 3, 4. Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 0.
Never been done before.
We're talking about a subject.
To bring you to the light.
Farewell to you, people.
Greetings, family. This is Hard Knock Radio, your daily source. Politics and social justice, broadcasting across Pacifica Radio Network. I am your host, Kalonji Changa, sitting in today for my brother, David D., who's currently taking some well-deserved time off. As always, we are holding it down with the support of our incredible producer, Anita Johnson, bringing you the stories the mainstream media often overlook or misrepresents. Today, we are diving into a tragedy that has sent shockwaves through the Twin Cities and the nation. We are discussing the fatal ICE shooting of Renee Nicole Good, a 37-year-old woman who was killed by federal agents yesterday morning in Minneapolis during a massive immigration enforcement operation. While the Department of Homeland Security claims self-defense, witness videos and local officials tell a much more harrowing story of reckless force in a residential neighborhood. Our guest today, Georgia Fort, is a 3-time Emmy Award-winning independent journalist and media entrepreneur based in Minnesota. She's the founder of Black Press and has been a leading voice in narrative justice, famously serving as one of the only two journalists inside the courtroom during the sentencing of Derek Chauvin. Her work focuses on amplifying truths often ignored by traditional outlets and providing context to the struggles of Black and marginalized communities. Georgia, how are you doing today?
You know, I'm hanging in there. It is a very crazy time in our country. And so just hanging in there. Thank you so much for having me on today.
Without a doubt. A lot going on. I agree with you. The country and the world itself is on fire. We're talking about the first 7 days. You have invasions. You have arrests. You have murders. I mean, we are certainly in for a treat in 2026. You on the ground following this operation yesterday. Can you walk us through the timeline of what happened on 33rd and Portland Avenue yesterday morning?
Yeah, so yesterday around 10 a.m., myself and a lot of other community leaders started getting tips that there had been an eyewitness account of seeing a legal observer fatally shot by an ICE agent. And I was actually supposed to be off yesterday and this entire week, actually. But once I got that call, I knew if it was true, what that would mean for the city of Minneapolis. What we're dealing with right now, it feels so familiar to what happened here in 2020. The only difference is that the terror that's being inflicted is being incited by federal agents. And so I arrived on the scene between 34th and 35th Avenue on Portland, and we saw the vehicle in which Renee Good was fatally shot in, blood splattered all over her airbag, all over her headrest, and community started to gather. Community started to gather. They started to demand the arrest of the federal agent who shot her. They started to demand that our local law enforcement stop coordinating with these federal agents. And we also saw our local sheriff's department coordinating in that effort as well. Several elected officials showed up on scene offering accurate, up-to-date information because that has been another thing that has been extremely difficult here in the city of Minneapolis. Just last week, we had a conservative YouTuber, Nick Shirley, come here and make all of these claims about daycare centers. Those claims have since been debunked by several different outlets who have actually investigated the integrity of these different businesses. But what we learned in the aftermath of that it was really a political strategy to weaponize the fraud that's happening in Minnesota against our current governor. and get him to resign. And that strategy was effective. And so I think as the nation grapples with what is really happening in America when it comes to the agenda, the real agenda of the federal government, not the perceived agenda, but the real agenda of the federal government, I think that the country should be very considerate of Minneapolis's position in that agenda, because they do have their eyes on our city. They've had their eyes on their city. And unfortunately, my biggest concern is that this is just the beginning.
No doubt. We appreciate that. Homeland Security has labeled Rene Good as a domestic terrorist, a professional agitator. Based on your reporting, who is Rene Good to the Minneapolis community?
Rene Good is a 37-year-old mother. I'm 37. I'm a mother. Rene Good is a poet. She's a woman who cared about her community. And when you watch the video, you will see for yourself that if there was any domestic terrorist present, it certainly was not her. When we talk about narrative, right? And that is the core of my work as an independent journalist, is changing the narrative, especially for Black Americans who have historically been criminalized and dehumanized by the media, right? And so narrative matters. When you use federal platforms, national platforms, to put out that rhetoric that this woman was a domestic terrorist, it has consequences. What that signals to the base of folks who support this administration is that that fatal use of force yesterday against Rene Good, a 37-year-old mother, is justified. But, you know, what I like people to do is to think back. Think back historically, and let's ask ourselves, when we talk about domestic terrorism, why were groups like the KKK never designated as a domestic terrorist group? Right. And so I think that this nation has always had a perverse relationship with domestic terrorism, one that justifies domestic terrorism when it is inflicted by the hands of white supremacists who are masked, which is another through line from the KKK to these federal agents. Why are these agents allowed to inflict brutality in our neighborhoods and our communities against U.S. citizens, against journalists who are protected under the First Amendment right? Why are they allowed to do these unlawful acts of violence while being masked? And so what that allows them to do is evade accountability. If you can't see their face, if you can identify them, how can you hold them accountable, right? And so there may have been domestic terrorists on 34th and Portland yesterday, but I can guarantee you her name was not Rene Good.
Definitely appreciate that. The shooting happened during a massive Department of Homeland Security operation. What had been the atmosphere, what has the atmosphere been like in Minneapolis since these raids began?
Well, again, contrary to what we're hearing from on a federal level, right? I've heard people say, you know, these rioters. Actually, I was out on 34th and Portland until about midnight, 11 or 12 o'clock last night, and things were peaceful. Folks were there, they were mourning, they were grieving, they were laying offerings at the location where Rene Good took her last breath, at the corner where there was a heavy police presence previously. You saw folks in the intersection who were outraged, who were grieving in their own way, who were expressing their frustration a little more loudly, but were still peaceful. And so what we've seen here is thousands of people taking to the streets. There was a vigil that was held at about 5 o'clock yesterday. Thousands of people ascended on the location where she took her last breath. And we just saw, you know, people there offering hand warmers, offering water to one another, just, you know, what you would expect to see in a community that is full of love and hope.
Local law enforcement, including Chief Brian O'Hara, expressed serious concern over federal tactics. How's the relationship between the MPD and ICE fracturing because of this?
You know, that's a tough one to call. What I'll say is the relationship between MPD and community is extremely fragile, as we haven't really had a chance to fully reconcile from what happened between community and MPD back in 2020 or 2021, or even in 2022 when Amir Locke was fatally shot by an MPD cop during a no-knock warrant, which was illegal at the time in the city of Minneapolis, right? So relationships here between elected officials even and our local law enforcement agencies are fragile. What's hard to say for certain in terms of their cooperation with the federal government is because as a truth teller, as an independent journalist, you know, I could tell you what the reports say. I could tell you what officials say in their statements. But for me, I don't really fully believe those things unless they match 100% to what I see with my own eyes. And so what we're hearing is this strong grandstand, but we're not really seeing strong grandstand action against what's happening. For example, why is the agent who fatally shot Renee Good still free? If the MPD chief and the mayor are so against what happened, why have they not issued a warrant for the arrest of the federal agent who shot and killed Renee Good? So you can go to a press conference and you can say whatever it is that you want to say that makes you feel good, that makes you look like you're on the right side of history, that rallies the people and gets them excited and in support of you. But if you don't follow up with all of that good intention with actual action, what does it really mean? And so it's hard to say whether or not we'll see them take action in the next 24 or 48 hours, but certainly the people in Minneapolis are watching.
So no doubt. And I'm glad you said that, because I know that, you know, you've been on the front lines for a minute. I know that you were involved in a case where, or you were present during the trial, as we mentioned, of Derek Chauvin, that racist pig. And we know that, you know, you were on the scene, you witnessed the pain that the community felt when George Floyd lost his life. Do you feel that, and it sounds like you do, that, and we heard the mayor yesterday talking about, you know, get the F out of Minneapolis. You know, we hear the governor, we hear the police, we see the police chief and all of that. Do you feel like it's just game and promotions? It's business as usual. And
let us just. I hope it's not, because we really do need an intervention. I certainly don't want to see our city. I don't want to see a repeat of what happened in 2020. But if elected officials don't find the courage to take action, it does feel like we're on our way to further escalation. And so, again, I don't, unfortunately, the mayor does not really respond to our requests for comments or interviews. And so it's really hard to put a finger on how sincere he is with what he's saying. It all sounds like he is in, you know, lockstep with his constituents. And that is what's needed in this moment, you know, to de-escalate things, to hold officials accountable, to hold federal agents accountable who has caused harm. One thing I do point to in terms of my own concern and cautious optimism, right? If you look back, we had a big federal raid here in June. If you look back just weeks before that big federal raid, Trump rolled back the dissent decree. So there was, after the murder of George Floyd, the Department of Justice under the Biden administration did a long investigation of the Minneapolis Police Department. And what they uncovered was years and years and years of patterns and practices of racial discrimination and human rights violations. And so as a result of that, the DOJ issued a dissent decree, and that would require MPD to follow certain protocols, to abide by, their policies, to have different level of oversight, all of these things, right? Well, when Trump got in office, so this had to have been probably about May, around the 5-year anniversary of George Floyd's murder, he actually rolled back that dissent decree. And so for me, what that signaled was either that something was offered in exchange of that, or that Trump, in good faith, took the federal pressure off of MPD, which then in turn would what? Merit them to cooperate? Well, all of these things at this time, I would say in true journalist fashion, are speculation. But it is well documented that Trump rolled back that dissent decree. And so my question is, and we'll probably never get the answer, but we should keep asking. As long as the federal agents are here, we should keep asking, why did the Trump administration roll back the dissent decree? And what did he get in exchange for it? And so until those questions can be answered, I will continue to be cautious of taking statements by elected officials, specifically the mayor and the chief of police. I will only take them at face value. If their actions do not align with what they're saying, I think that people should be skeptical of what they're telling the community.
No question. You're checking out Hard Knock Radio on the Pacifica Radio Network. I'm Kalonji Chonga, and I'm standing in for our main man, Davey D, who is on vacation. We're here with Georgia Fort. Georgia Fort is an attorney, award-winning attorney out of the Minneapolis area.
Journalist.
Journalist.
I would love that. I would love to be in the courtroom, but not there yet.
I said attorney. I'm just making everybody attorneys this week. We do have an amazing attorney coming up next. But yes, Georgia Fort is an amazing journalist. And we're happy to have her here. We have a couple more questions because we know that Georgia has to get back out in those mean streets and, combat mercenary media, as we call it, because of the fact that we know that we have all these other media outlets pushing and peddling manure. Georgia, real quick, you've been a champion for narrative justice. Speaking of mercenary media, how have you seen the mainstream media framing this incident versus the reality of what you're seeing in the streets?
You know, this one, I think that they've done a decent job on. And I think probably because of and mainstream media, that their back is starting to be pushed up against the wall. And they're starting to see that if they uphold narrative status quo, then they will lose the freedom that they have as members of the press. And so I would actually say this is probably one of very few instances where I would say that the majority of mainstream media has done a decent job humanizing Renee, being skeptical and waiting until they actually see the video footage to make a determination about what actually happened. And so I think this time around, like, they're contributing to escalating things. But unless you've seen something that I haven't, I would say in this instance, they've done an all right job.
That's amazing to hear, especially coming from you saying that the mainstream media has done an all right job. I think that must be the people pressure that's going on right now. Have you heard any immediate demands made from the family or community leaders that you've spoken with?
What I've heard from community leaders is that they want to see the federal agent who fatally shot her arrested. That is the number one demand. Second to that, I would say that
folks are tired of ICE running rampant in our community. Both St. Paul and Minneapolis, the Twin Cities alike, are supposed to be sanctuary cities. And now folks are saying, well, we have sanctuary policies. We're not a sanctuary city. But either way, there have been a lot of questions about how our local law enforcement agencies should and should not be coordinating with federal agents. And so people want to leave. And if that doesn't happen, them to stop doing crowd control, they want them to stop holding the line. They want them to stop, you know, escorting them in and out of neighborhoods, just not even on the scene. Unless I guess you would say if a person was hurt, maybe, you know, but yeah, those are the two things that I have consistently heard as I have talked to different people throughout community.
No doubt. Georgia, we know you're busy. We want to thank you for coming on. Looking forward to bringing you back on again soon. Be safe out there. And, you know, again, we appreciate you. Keep up the solid work.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Right on. You're checking out Hard Knock Radio. Again, I'm Kalonji Changa, sticking in, hanging out on behalf of Davey D. Davey D somewhere, parts unknown, you know, enjoying the sun somewhere, I'm quite sure. But again, it's Hard Knock Radio on the Pacifica Radio Network. We'll be right back. We have another guest, a powerful attorney, Nana Giamfi. This is Hard Knock Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
This is America. Don't catch you slipping now. Don't catch you slipping now. Look what I'm whipping now. This is America. Don't catch you slipping now. Don't catch you slipping now. Look what I'm whipping now. This is America. Don't catch you slipping now. Look how I'm living now. Police be tripping now. Yeah, this is America. Guns in my area. I got the strap.
We are back. This is Hard Knock Radio. Kalonji Changa hanging out on behalf, representing for Davey D today, who's on vacation. Again, it's the Pacifica Radio Network. Our first quarter, shall I say, we had a powerful conversation with Georgia Fort, who is out there in those mean streets of Minneapolis dealing with this recent ICE case. Up next, I have Nana Giamfi. Nana Giamfi is a powerhouse movement attorney with over 3 decades of experience in the fight for Black liberation. She's the executive director of the Black Alliance for Just Immigration. She's a human rights defender and professor. Nana has dedicated her career to challenging state violence and protecting the rights of Black immigrants and refugees globally. Welcome into the stage today, Nana Giamfi. How are you, Nana?
Thank you for having me. You know what? It's like a lot going on. And so you want to say that it's a lot going on. But at the same time, every time something happens, I feel more filled with the energy of let's get them. So I'm in a let's get them mode.
That's all right. I'm glad to see someone else on here talking about let's get them, because I was getting tired. I was like the preacher getting late in the evening. You know what I mean? So I wasn't sure we was going to still get them. So I'm reinvigorated. I brought you on today. I know, and I appreciate you coming on last minute. I know that, the world knows, at least folks here in the U.S., you know, they know what happened yesterday in Minneapolis. 37-year-old Renee Nicole Good gunned down. Many of us saw the video. I don't know if you got an opportunity to watch it. ICE running rampant again. What was your thoughts and what's your take on that situation?
So first of all, you know, obviously it's very sad, and condolences to her family, condolences to the folks who loved her. She is, there's been at least 4 or 5, someone has a list of like 8 people who have been shot by ICE. I think 4 or 5 at least have been killed. And some of the, at least 4 I know since the invasion of Chicago last year. And so this is not like a singular incident, but it certainly is a tragic incident. And so I want to say that first. And the reason I want to say that first, because my next piece is going to be expressing some frustration, I will say, Brother Kalonji, because so many of us have been trying to get people to understand that ICE are pigs. Like, there's no special thing about ICE. ICE are cops. Right. And cops murder. Cops terrorize. What did our Baba Fela Kuti teach us? They bring sorrow, tears, and blood. Their regular trademark. Like, that's what they do. And so this idea that ICE would somehow be some kind of glorified private security that's just pushing people, I guess, into cars and dragging them away from family and community is just a dissonance with what the reality is. There has never been a line between or a separation between immigration enforcement and criminal punishment enforcement in real life. And what has happened with this regime is that they've just snatched, as they have with everything else, right? The pretense off, they've snatched the covers off and made it open and plain that even in places that call themselves sanctuary cities or welcoming cities, and you know, that local police even provide some kind of background singer gig work on behalf of who we refer to as the body snatchers. And so I think I'm sad about what's happening. I'm sad about her murder. I'm sad about the murder of others that has happened across this country by these varying levels of federal cops. But I'm also hoping that this gets people to understand once and for all that this is not about nationality and that this is not about immigration, that this is really about using nationality and immigration as the tip of the spear to open up the police state that racist, fascist, authoritarians need to get down and do what they're trying to do.
You know, I'm with you on that because of the fact that, you know, of course, folks who understand law enforcement and they understand immigration, you know, we know that oftentimes we're overlooked when it comes to certain situations. They come up with all types of plans, ideas, and thoughts. In this case, because Mrs. Good has a lighter complexion, shall we say, the case is looked at a little differently. And so ICE, the state had to say, okay, well, she was attacking us because she's not a quote unquote immigrant. So you couldn't use that as an excuse. You couldn't say that, they were on the run or whatever the case is. They're reporting that she was an observer, right? So it's a different take, it's a different spin because they still have to spin it. Even while we're looking at the video, you have President Trump and others talking about how, you know, these folks these protesters are terrorists and they're committing crimes and so on and so forth. And she'd been stalking ICE all day and all types of nonsense. She was stalking ICE. That's like a real, I don't know too many people stalk the police, but nevertheless, you know, this is the spin. I want to ask you, because I think that, you know, again, we look at ICE as some type of different type of situation. Mm-hmm. I know many people view immigration as a Latino issue. Can you explain the prison to ICE pipeline and why, quote unquote, Black immigrants are actually deported at much higher rates than other groups?
Absolutely. And this is why we understand, as people that are Black immigrants or even African-Americans who are concerned about Black immigrants, this is why we understand that there's no distinction, that these folks work together and been working together. Up until this regime, because the numbers from last year are going to be wild. We'll see what they turn out to be. But up until then, between 77% and 82%, depending on what year you were talking about, of Black immigrants who face deportation are facing deportation because of contact with the police. To level set, Black immigrants are 8% of the immigrant population, right? 8%. And yet 20% of those who are facing deportation in immigration court, again, last year's numbers are higher, but up until last year on the normal situation, 20% of those who are facing deportation are Black immigrants. So we're 8% of the population, but 20% of those who are facing deportation, right? And as I said, on average, 78% of Black immigrants that are being deported are deported on criminal grounds. There was a year during the Biden administration where that actually went up to about 82% of Black immigrants who face deportation, facing deportation because of contact with the police. And I want to really describe it that way because it's not the immigration system, a criminal system, right? It's not a criminal punishment system. It's a civil system. And so what it can use in order to detain and deport someone does not have to be an actual conviction of a crime that someone would consider to be even a serious crime, right? It's just contact with the police leads down this road of ending up in deportation. And that happens for adults. That happens for children. So when we talk about the school to prison pipeline for immigrant children, Black immigrant children, that becomes the school to detention to prison to deportation pipeline, right? And when people are imprisoned who are or put into jail who are Black immigrants, they also now automatically face deportation. Even if they've been in this country for 20 years, they could have been here for 30 years. It's retroactive. People are being deported today that are being deported for a weed case that they picked up in the 1990s, right? And they may even have been pardoned. They may even have been pardoned and they're still facing deportation. And so there is a situation that we understand when we see Popo, when we see 5-0, right? When we see the police, we see deportations. We know what that means. When this administration went into Chicago, when this administration went into Memphis, when this administration invaded, obviously, Minneapolis, invaded New York, who are the people who are disproportionately being targeted and in the cooperation, right? Wax on with immigration enforcement, wax off with criminal punishment enforcement. It's Black people. And Black people, both immigrant and not. So in Chicago, some of the people getting caught up or and who were caught up and continue to get caught up are African-American. In Memphis, in that invasion, they started with the criminal punishment side, even though they described it as an immigration thing. Over 60% of the folks who were arrested in Memphis when they first invaded were Black people, the vast majority of them African-American, because they claimed they were going after people with traffic warrants, right? And when you look at Minneapolis, we see that there are both people who are immigrants who are US citizens, right, who have naturalized and been born in the country, such as myself, who have gotten picked up. But there's also been African-Americans that have gotten picked up, because how can they tell the difference? You know, there's a notion, I think, that some of our community members have, both Black immigrant and African American, that Black immigrants have a special look. I need people to throw that notion in the trash. Stop thinking there's a special look for African Americans. There is not. You know what I'm saying? There's not a special Haitian look. There's not a special look. It's right. A race issue. And they're going after us based upon race. Because you don't see any Ukrainians being caught up in this. Ever. And they ended their temporary protective status. But where are the stories about Ukrainian after Ukrainian being picked up? This is clearly about race. Where's the stories about Irish, white Irish person after white Irish person being picked up? It's clearly about race. And whenever something's about race in this country, we know that Black people are going to be impacted hardest.
Hey, we appreciate that. You talked about this special look. I don't know what that special look for African Americans are, but you know, perhaps you know, in some wild land, we believe that, right? There was a recent Supreme Court ruling allowing ICE to use appearance, as you said, as a basis for stops. How does this specifically endanger Black, quote unquote, US citizens who may be profiled as non-citizens?
Well, first of all, I want us to take a step back because racial profiling has always been what they've been doing. You know what I mean? So sometimes people were like clutching their pearls and, you know, clutching their whatever else, ties and t-shirts or whatever, and were like, oh my God, I can't believe it. They said they can racially profile. What do you think they have been doing? What are we talking about? That is what this whole criminal punishment system is based upon. The whole lock them up system is based upon racial profiling. So we already know that that happens. And so we've already been in danger. That's not a new danger that has come up. What the Supreme Court did was just alert people that, hey, there is a, you know, remember, this danger is here, because it wasn't like they were not doing that before. I think, unfortunately, because Kavanaugh's and we'll call it an opinion, even though it doesn't have the force of law, but because Kavanaugh's statement, right, opinion in terms of what he wrote in response, because that focused on what people think of as brown Latinos, even though we know that the Latino, Latinx community is not just brown, but because he focused on them, you had some Black people that still were saying, both Black American and African American and Black immigrant, that were saying, oh, it's really just the racial profiling of them, okay? But that's not what it says. It doesn't limit it to them. It says if it's race, if it's nationality, if it's the way that you talk, where you work, the kind of work you do, that all of those things are enough. And you and I both know that when we start looking at what kind of work people are doing, and we combine that with race, and we combine that with all of the factors that he brought up, that we find ourselves as working class people being, and particularly working class people in certain types of jobs, now being targeted specifically, and that African Americans fall within that category. And we're seeing it. I mean, I heard someone say, oh, it's just like one African American, you know, ever. No, it's not. There are plenty that have been caught up in this system, plenty that have been caught up in these invasions and in these raids. And I think it's important for our people to understand that once they catch you, it is very hard to get out. Kavanaugh lied. It is not, oh, you say I have a U.S. passport, or I'm a citizen, or you show a birth certificate and then you get to go. No, people show all of that, and they're still being held right now in Aich Detention Prison, which is just prison.
For those who say, and you just mentioned, I'm a citizen, and it doesn't affect me, what is the danger of allowing a federal agency to operate with qualified immunity in our backyards?
Well, I mean, it's clear that when we have, first of all, we have law enforcement that's able to act with impunity, and that has been the case, right? Because we know that even when people are arrested, even when cops are arrested, even when cops are convicted, that doesn't stop the pigalicious behavior. Pigaliciousness yet still reigns, right? And so that qualified immunity gives them the ability to have a cover for their activity. Now, if you look in the case of immigration enforcement, what they're trying to do in terms of expanding the police state, Brother Kalaji, is they're trying to actually push past qualified immunity to absolute immunity, because they've always believed that. CBP, Customs and Border Protection, they've always believed that they had absolute immunity, that they didn't have to care about the Fourth Amendment, they didn't have to care about the Third Amendment, the Fifth Amendment, that they can do whatever they want to do. ICE clearly has been empowered to feel the same way. But ICE is not out there by themselves. Even when they go in these invasions, remember, they have everybody out there, ATF, DEA, postal police, IRS police. I'm not joking. They have every form of federal law enforcement out there engaging in the same activities that ICE is engaging in. That's why we don't call it ICE, Abaji. We're talking about the body snatchers. That is who they are. And whether the local governments or state governments work with them or not, they've amassed the capacity, plus the masked mercenaries that they've now brought into the fray. And they're pushing for an absolute immunity allowance, which, you know, would derive in their mind from the absolute immunity that the president has.
You're checking out Hard Knock Radio on the Pacifica Radio Network. I am Kalaji Changa, filling in for Davey D. Our guest today is attorney Nana Giamfi. I'm sitting here and I'm listening, and we know the play, and I'm listening to you talk about IRS police and postal police, so on and so forth. And many of our people are clueless. We have these social media scholars who get on and they're telling you about who's Black and who's not. You know what I'm saying? You have these different groups and they say it doesn't affect us, so on and so forth. We know that's all myth. We know it's BS. But as an attorney, I know that we've seen reports that Black migrants have faced nearly double the rate of abuse in detention centers. Mm-hmm. How does anti-Blackness manifest itself within the walls of ICE facilities?
And thank you for bringing this up, Kalonji. It's really important because once people get behind the walls, whether that's because of the criminal punishment system or the immigration enforcement system, they're so often forgotten. Immigration prison is torture. Prison is torture, period. So let me start with that. But immigration prison adds this additional layer because of the lack of even basic oversight, right? Think about the fact that you had federal agents that, Congress people that went to the different detention prisons all over the country and were denied entry. Like they literally told them, no, you cannot come in, which does not happen in federal prison. If a congressperson shows up and says, hey, I'm here to see what's going on here, they're let in. We don't hear about those kinds of fights. But you heard about that with the detention prison to the point that Congresswoman McIver out of Jersey is being prosecuted, right? Remember, they arrested her. They arrested Mayor Baraka based upon them going to see this detention prison. She was actually able to go in with a couple other congresspeople and then came out, objected to the attack on Mayor Baraka and also on the elderly congresswoman who was with her, and now is facing a federal indictment, federal charges. We're not talking about it, I think, in my view, because she's not a dude. So we're not talking about it as much as we talked about Mayor Ross Baraka. But the reality is that she's facing even more serious charges right now just for trying to look and see what is happening in these detention prisons. Because she's heard, as so many others have from groups like Baji and others, that what is happening there is torture, and that Black migrants that are there and Black citizens who have been seized and thrown in there are facing completely terrible conditions. People are not getting, for example, the medical care that they need. And that's not just like, oh, they're not getting, Tylenol for their headaches. They're not getting insulin. People are dying. People are contracting the types of diseases that you need to have medical care for, and they are being denied that medical care. There's a case of a brother, Rodney Taylor, out of Georgia, came to this country when he was 2. He and his mother fled the war in Liberia. He was able to come here through the Shriners because he had terrible disabilities and needed so many surgeries. Has been here for 44 years, going on 43. Was picked up when he was 16 for burglary, pled guilty when he was 18. So at that point, he was an adult, but has since been pardoned in Georgia, Brother Kalonji. You know, that's not easy. He was picked up last year, has a fiance between them. They got 5 kids. He's a double amputee, had a barbershop that he was running in Atlanta. He was picked up in February, still hasn't been let out. Do you know these people would not give him his legs at one point? Would not charge his legs, put him in solitary confinement because he didn't move quickly enough when they did count. He has suffered and had to go in and out. We've had to scream and yell, including his fiance, Mildred Pierre, who's done a great job to try to make sure that he gets some kind of medical care. It has been excruciatingly difficult. This is a system that performed hysterectomies on immigrant women. In fact, at that same detention prison, Stewart Detention Prison, without their consent. This is a prison system that has allowed agents to come in and beat Black migrants to try to get them to sign that they voluntarily deport themselves out of the country. So it's coercion, it's sexual abuse, it's a medical neglect, it's intentional medical torture, so much that is happening. And again, so many deaths that are occurring, unprecedented number of deaths that have occurred in the past year in detention prison that people are not talking about.
Now let's take this back a little bit, because I'm listening to you and the listeners are listening to you and the viewers are checking you out. And you just said, and I want to make sure I heard you correctly because of the fact that I know you was talking fast. And I know that, sometimes I don't hear too well, right? But I've thought that you just said that they put a man who has no legs in solitary confinement because he wasn't moving quick enough.
Correct. After they refused to help him charge his leg, because he has a prosthetic leg that is electronic. It got to be charged up. Okay. They refused to help him charge it. Had it sitting in a moist space when he's telling them it can't have water, and then put him in solitary confinement.
Now, you're not going to tell us this great country is that cruel. Nana. I mean, come on now. Not this good country, not with this, these, as Malcolm say, these good people.
Yeah.
I mean, this is good insane. People. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why is it, in your view, because of the fact that you probably answered this, but we need to properly drive this home, right? Why should Black folks, whether they are born in the United States, became citizens of the United States, allies of the United States, whatever the case, why should ICE be a fight that Black folks are concerned with and should be involved with? And
so I think that we need to look at this in the frame that we know is real. And that frame that we know is real is that what this regime is pressing is a Eurofuturistic view of this country, in which there are as many white people as possible, and the only reason for the rest of us is to be their serfs, right? They're slaves, they're serfs, whatever terminology you want to use. That is really what they're looking for. And that this fight that they are making up around immigration is actually at the root of it, not a fight about people who were born in some other country and that have now come here, but actually a fight to attack the very concept of what it is to be a citizen, in an effort to denaturalize, to de-citizenize African-Americans, right? So when you look, for example, at this attack at birthright citizenship, we cannot look at it separately from this press for immigration enforcement, because if people are not citizens, then they are immigrants, right? You can't be both. So if you're not a citizen, then that means that you are an other. You are someone who is foreign. You are not from here. And if they can convince all of us that what should happen to non-white people, to Black people, you know, brown folks, Asian folks, indigenous folks, if they can convince us that what should happen to those folks who are not from here, right, is that those people should be expelled unless they can be used, unless they can be labor, unless they can be profit. Black Americans, African Americans are going to find themselves confused when they are told that actually birthright citizenship only applies to people who were here in 1864. And by the way, we, the government, are going to determine how you prove that. You got Black Americans that can't get real ID. You feel me? Can't get real ID for themselves now.
Crazy.
You're not going to be able to take a Bible and say, oh, this Bible came down through our family. You're not going to be able to take your, you know, records from the Church of the Latter-day Saints. They're going to decide. The government, let me be clear, is going to decide what counts as citizenship. That's why it matters when ICE says, I don't care if you're a citizen. I don't care if you have a passport. I don't care if you have a birth certificate. Because if the passport doesn't prove your citizenship, if the birth certificate doesn't prove your citizenship, what proves it? They're determining the documentation. And it is fallacy to imagine that the documentation is going to be decided by Black folks, that we're going to get to decide, or that African-Americans, because I'm not African-American, that African-Americans are going to get to decide what counts and what doesn't count. That's not what's going to happen. But don't worry. There'll be forms to fill out. And for just $500,000 per family member, you too can be a United States citizen. That is where this is going. Citizenship for profit, in which they will decide whether you have the moral character to be a U.S. citizen, which means issues of criminalization, which means issues of political dissent, which means, you know, do you agree with the politics of this country or not, which means issues of education, which means issues of profession. All of that is going to come into play, as it does for immigrants right now today, to decide whether your Black self is going to be able to be a part of this citizenship in this country or not. And so, yes, I'm going to ask folks to have the same vision that our ancestors had when they fought, not knowing when the wall would fall, to look past themselves right here into a world in which their children, their children's children, you know, will have to prove that they belong or are able to live in this country in peace.
Nana, we appreciate you. That's our time. You properly drove it home. We're going to have you back on here to remind folks of where we are, because not often do we get it handed to us the way you just handed it. I am Kalonji Changa. That is our time for today on Hard Knock Radio here on the Pacific Radio Network. I want to thank our guests, Georgia Fort and Nana Njamfi, for their brilliance and their bravery. Special thanks to Anita Johnson for keeping the wheels turning. The death of Renee Nicole Good is a reminder of the high stakes of our communities, and you know, that we must continue to fight. We will follow this story and lift up the voices of those fighting for accountability. Stay tuned, be strong, and continue to do what we need to do. This is Hard Knock Radio. We're out.
Due to unprecedented civil unrest, all forms of protest are now classified as acts of terrorism. This is not a test. This is not a test.
Coward, traitor, liar, foe, grab a tyrant by the toe. Fascist puppet show, line them up like dominoes. Never bow to a in a toupee, yelling free speech, but controlling what the news say. The Lorax called, it's time to find a new shade. RuPaul's never seen a beat that bad on Drag Race. Ain't it obvious the person in the office is a racist? Brad came in the mail, but he opposes immigration. And someone's apple leader, not a foreign armed invasion. That would be the mass man reading graduation ceremonies. Unmarked van snatching people off the street. Broke amendments 5, 10, and 14, at least. But please tell me again, oh, this is still democracy?
Repeat. This is not a test.
Coward, traitor, liar, foe, grab a tyrant by the toe. Fascist puppet show, line them up like dominoes. Coward, traitor, liar, foe, grab a tyrant by the toe. Fascist puppet show, line them up like dominoes. Please explain it to me. The man in charge of the economy's got 6 bankruptcies. Huh? Asking ChatGPT to define GDP, defund an education when half the country can't read. Well, now it's clicking for me. You need the people asleep, and knowledge is the greatest threat to propaganda machines. Remember, books don't burn, they just quietly vanish. So don't wait till it's too late to panic. Iceberg, Titanic, threat level orange. Don't you see that they're ignoring our rights? It's fascism wrapped in red, blue, and white. Coward, traitor, liar, foe, grab a tyrant by the toe. Fascist puppet show, line them up like dominoes. Coward, traitor, liar, foe, grab a tyrant by the toe. Fascist puppet show, line them up like
dominoes.
It's a threat level orange.
Warning.
It's a threat level orange.
Warning.
It's a threat level orange. Threat level orange.
The American dream's like any other. Open your eyes and it's gone.